Hello, welcome to A Safe Place, a podcast where we discuss school gun violence and how to keep kids safe in schools. I am your host, Louis Aponte, and I'm the author of the upcoming books, A Safe Place, How to Prevent the Next School Shooting, and the Ultimate U.S. School Shooting Reference Guide. Thank you for joining me. I am honored to have you here with me today. This is episode 11. I am privileged to have Mr. Will Griffin as my guest today. He is the Director of Communications at the Department of Defense Education Activity, and he has graciously accepted my invitation on his own personal time at home to answer a few questions related to school safety at public schools on U.S. military bases. Welcome, Mr. Griffin. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, thanks. And thanks for having me, Lewis.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Mr. Griffin, I understand that you've been in your current position since February 2021, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I've been with the Department of Defense Education Activities since January 2016. So,
Oh,
a
wow.
couple of different places. Been fortunate to be part of what we do in supporting and serving military-connected kids and families for almost 7 years now.
7 years, excellent. And prior to that, you were in Europe, was that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I joined DoDEA following a 25-year career in the Army, so it was
Nice.
a great fit and a good transition to still be part of that community and serve.
That's nice you're able to do that. My father, as we were kind of discussing before we started recording, my father was in the Army for 20 years, and I know what that's like moving every 3 years and just having that whole different cultural experience. I mean, we got to live in Italy, Germany, Hawaii, New Mexico, so big differences. So transitioning to the civilian world was a big step. So, what did you, if you don't mind me asking, what did you enjoy most about those experiences? Did you learn any new languages?
I would say I'm a functional German speaker. And
Nice.
by functional, I mean fluent enough to find out where the restroom is or order a beer or all of those critical skills when you're in a foreign country.
Right. Yeah. I used to be able to do that. When I lived in Italy as a kid, but now I just remember the basic greetings like, buongiorno, arrivederci, quanti anni hai, how much is it? Those basic stuff. Beyond that, no, I don't even know when they're talking bad about me anymore. But so first question I wanted to ask you was, I was very fortunate growing up in the military family, as I mentioned before. And let me see, going to school on a military base, especially overseas, was very different than attending civilian public schools in the US. Would you agree?
Yes, I would say it is different. The military community definitely has its own culture, and in some cases, it is a safe space, a safe island, no matter what country it's located in. But while also giving military families and kids the opportunity to experience different cultures and to be representatives for the United States.
Okay. And I imagine they have the same, well, not the same, but very similar challenges. They have, might have money challenges, they might have relationship challenges. But I've never ever heard of a school shooting occurring on a DoD public school. It's like, have you ever, can you think of a single example?
Well, I can only speak definitively for installations where Department of Defense Education Activity schools are located.
Okay.
So for those schools, I can say to my knowledge, we have never had an incident of that type in one of our schools. Now, having said that, there are a lot of public schools on military installations in the continental United States. And we operate about 50 schools in the Americas region, primarily in the southeastern U.S. and then up at West Point, New York. But
Wow.
outside of those schools, say at Fort Riley, Kansas, or another example, Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, things like
Right.
that, where there are schools on installations, I'm not aware of any shooting or a shooting incident ever taking place within one of the schools.
Okay, so I know this might be speculating because you mentioned earlier that the culture is different when you're living on the military base. Why do you think that is? I mean, do they not have the same challenges? I mean, there's just certainly plenty of guns on a military base. So, like, what's going on differently on military schools?
Well, I think as you mentioned, there are a lot of challenges for military families and military connected students. Frequent deployments or time away from home. I mean, the nature of the mission is often just challenging, no matter whether it's in the garrison or installation, or whether a loved one is deployed abroad somewhere. So, I think though that there is definitely The military community culture is one that's family oriented. It's a culture of high achievement and certainly a culture of support and inclusion. And I think all those things make a difference for military families to feel that common bond when they're together, particularly in overseas environments.
That's interesting that you say that about the emphasis on you know, families and support and inclusion, because I think that's a very important element that keeps coming up in the media. And I feel like civilian schools could probably learn, even maybe even our elected officials could really learn from those examples and try to maybe apply that or adapt that to the civilian life as well. What about things like lockdown drills? You know, do they happen on military bases?
So we do have a range of security protocols that are in place for our schools. We follow the standard response protocol, or SRP, from the I Love You Guys Foundation. We've used that for several years.
And could you elaborate on that? What is that?
It's a framework of security protocols that are used in many school districts across the nation.
Okay.
It features basically five elements: so hold, secure, lockdown, evacuation, shelter, and reunification.
Okay.
Those are the different elements that make up the standard response protocols. So we've had those in place for a number of years, and we do practice them regularly with at our schools worldwide.
Right.
So students are aware of procedures. They know what to do, where to go, and it doesn't just apply in for you know, crisis type situations. It could be weather emergencies, natural disasters, or really anything that would happen to impact the course of a normal school day. So it gives us a defined set of those procedures where everyone knows what to do, where to go, and we're able to do everything we can to ensure a safe and secure environment for our students.
I know there's only so many details you can give, but would you say during your time since 2016, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that has evolved over time?
I think, well, yes, definitely. I mean, the protocols have been in place for a while. But adding other elements into it, like training and collaborative events with our installation partners, so the military commands.
Right, right. Okay.
We're in a process where we have security management training with the installation command and representatives from the from law enforcement, emergency management, the first responders.
Okay.
So all of the different entities that you would find on a military installation that are involved in safety and security, we come together with them for a tabletop exercise where all the participants will run through different scenarios. And so that way they can integrate capabilities, ensure that there's consistent communication
right.
across all the parties involved, which, as you're well aware, often in crisis situations is one of the most difficult pieces.
Right.
And then to ensure that everyone else knows what everyone else is doing and will do. So those have really been invaluable, I think, in the way of improving our capability and our capacity to ensure that safe and secure environment.
That's excellent. So I imagine the communication is key among the different organizations to make sure that you're reacting in a timely fashion, to put it mildly. Yeah. Because I mean, especially in any crisis situation, seconds, literally, not just minutes, but every second counts,
sure.
I imagine. And so that communication, I'm sure, helps a lot. What about things, I don't know if you're allowed to discuss this, but what about things like metal detectors? Do schools on military bases have that? Why or why not?
Well, as I mentioned, we do have a range of security protocols that are in place in our schools. It would not be appropriate to discuss specific measures that are in place at each installation, but...
Okay.
Between those procedures and protocols that are in place, and then that cooperative relationship we have with installation commands and the services on those installations, it creates a holistic network that we can leverage in those emergency situations.
Okay. Okay. If am I able to ask you about what kind of sources of like mental health for children do you guys have?
Sure. We have a range of different resources that are available to military connected students, and that starts with the school counselor. We have behavioral health specialists in many schools, very strong cooperative relationships with the behavioral health services on the military installations as part of military treatment facilities. In some cases, some installations, we have a psychologist that actually sits in the school. A military psychologist that is able to provide assistance to our students in that school setting. There is the military family life counselors or the MFLICs that are in many schools, and they also play a piece in providing kind of that network of behavioral health services to students. We've been rolling out for the last 2 years a multi-tiered systems of support program that looks at supports and interventions at different levels, both on the academic side and the social emotional health side. So we can kind of provide a wraparound environment that is supportive for our military connected students and enables them to learn, achieve, and be able to succeed in their goals.
And you said it's multi-tiered. Does that also include like preventative measures whenever, I don't know, maybe you might identify warning signs, whether it might be like nonverbal or maybe another child will come up to the counselor. It's like, hey, you might want to check on so and so. He's having a rough time with it. What is are you able to elaborate more on the multi-tiered mental health services?
Well, in the when we talk about the multi-tiered systems of support or MTSS, as it's commonly known, we look at that in terms of the tiers being a pyramid where your broader set of resources available, and this could be academic or general mental health or behavioral health resources that are available at any times, and then we move to smaller populations where it may be certain groups that would benefit from interventions, whether it's academic or identified with needs being in certain situations. Like, say you might have a large number of students in a particular grade or class or school within a community whose parents have deployed. So we can identify that those students may need some extra supports or resources. So we can do a targeted intervention in that sense to ensure those resources are available. And then we get down to individual students at kind of that third tier of support and determining what resources or assistance that they may need for more specific issues that can come up in life.
Thank you for that. Mr. Griffin, if and again, I know this is speculation. Have you ever been invited to a civilian school to perhaps give any advice in terms of school safety or mental health or anything like that? And if not, what kind of advice do you think you might offer to schools that might seek assistance?
I haven't personally been invited. I know it at different times. Many of our schools have strong partnerships with schools off the installation, so they collaborate and communicate on across a range of things. I think one of the biggest things that we are able to benefit from is that culture of community, the family-centric kind of environment that you see on in the military communities, and people looking out for each other and always being available to reach out and assist when it's needed. I think you see those differences, particularly in the military services, that you may not necessarily see in say a on the factory floor or a corporate setting where employees may see things, behaviors change, but they may not know what to do. They may feel like they should mind their own business. It's different because in the military environment, I think so much trust and reliance is placed on your peers in that setting as a soldier, sailor, airman, marine, coast guardsman, that you're more aware of where they are.
Yes.
in terms of of feelings and issues that they may be facing, and more willing to help.
That's
So
amazing.
I think that that culture of support and interreliance on one another is definitely a strong factor that that forms bonds that helps the community as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's a very valuable point. I think that's one of the reasons because I grew up in a military family, and so when I in the civilian world, things like racism and drugs and gangs, those are all such foreign concepts. I was like, wait a minute, you don't like me because I'm Hispanic? What? I don't understand. Because when you're in the military, and I was in the Air Force, and you're taught that if you're in war. And whoever's, to your left and to your right and everything, regardless of what their religion is, what their race is, what, whatever the situation is like, you're putting your life in their hands and vice versa. So I think you're right there. I think that that sense of bonding and understanding each other's situation, I think that really does help in terms of establishing better relationships and a more cohesive environment. So I really appreciate your insights. Do you have any other projects that you're working on right now in terms of the schools here in the DoD EA?
Well, as I said, we are definitely in moving full speed ahead with a full implementation of the multi-tiered systems of support
Okay.
across all of our schools. We're very fortunate to benefit from many of those factors that are present in the military community, not just for safety and security, but that culture of high achievement. We've been identified as one of the strongest performing school systems in the U.S. through the National Assessment of Educational Progress that's come out. College Board just recognized 38 out of our 40 high schools for being on the Advanced Placement Honor Roll.
Oh, wow.
So I think that culture of high achievement, the desire to succeed, that sense of support for each other,
Right.
we're very fortunate in being able to benefit from all of those factors. And at the end of the day, really for us, it's all about our military connected students being able to succeed and move forward and be ready for college or careers.
Excellent. Mr. Griffin, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a privilege. Again, I appreciate you taking your personal time after working hours just to come meet with me. And if I ever have any questions, I'd love to pick your brain again. And so you have a great night, and thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Lucy. It was a pleasure speaking with you this evening.
Likewise, you have a good night. Take care.
Thanks. Take care.